25 years of exploring new worlds, new ideas, and new people. Years of entertaining conversation, stimulating information. Join the Celebration 25 with
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome to a Saturday night. It's open mic. I'm Bill Jenkins, delighted to have you along. And I want you to sit back and open your mind, because we're going to open it to new vistas of science. Things that you didn't know were going on all around you all the time. And we have a man who knows about that, Dr. Bob Baptist, with us. So, open your mind, turn up the set, stay with Dr. Robert Beck. Delighted to have you back with us here on KABC. Are you in tune?
Well, we're just about organized here.
What's going on in the world of the sciences that most people don't know about that are quite stimulating and interesting and perhaps a little bit ominous?
Had a fascinating trip to Washington slightly less than a month ago and met with some of the people who are a little bit more up to speed on these things than I am. And let's hope
in Washington? That's really interesting.
We brought a few toys down here and can simulate the sounds of consciousness that a person would hear if he were using biofeedback equipment.
Wait a minute. The sounds of consciousness.
Right. An amplified brainwave.
Let's talk about that for just a second. The sounds of consciousness. Kind of get that in context. You know, people are always saying we want to elevate your consciousness. I've never wanted to elevate the consciousness, because the consciousness is where all the bad stuff is going on. I'd rather elevate the unconscious than where
right.
We actually are motivated. What is the sound of consciousness, and what is consciousness as you see it, Bob?
Dr. Kamiya, Joseph Kamiya, made an absolutely fascinating discovery in about 1965 when he was at the University of Chicago Sleep Lab. He found one of these serendipities, one of his first subjects, could had sort of a feedback loop to his unconscious and could actually control his brainwaves, produce alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1969, this new discovery, the voluntary control of what had been considered involuntary function, had become the darling of psychology, parapsychology,
etc., etc.
A lot of cults spun off, the Silver Mind Control group that happened to be hypnotizing people and telling them, go to your levels.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of very good work was done, basically at the Langley Porter Neuropsychiatric Institute in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it started an entire rash of biofeedback experimentation. Dr. Barbara Brown was working out here at the Veterans Administration, Sepulveda, and excellent work was being done at the Menninger Foundation, Drs. Elise and Elmer Green. And it emerged that a particular brainwave state, theta, happened to correlate with creativity, accessing cosmic consciousness, and the alpha state, which was considered to be 8 to 12 hertz, we'll hear some of this a little later, was identified as a meditative state. In fact, teams...
How are we going to hear an 8 hertz signal here?
Well, I just brought a little medicine bag with a couple of biofeedback instruments, and if we don't have any volunteers for heads, we'll put a signal generator into it, and we'll let the audience hear what their own brainwaves would sound like in altered states.
I don't think this radio station will broadcast 8 hertz, will it?
We'll hear a modulated tone. We use a carrier tone at around 2 kilohertz, and then we modulate that with the brainwave itself. So what the audience will hear will be a frequency-modulated or a voltage-controlled oscillator that we can use to simulate the various brain states.
Okay. So you're going to hear something that you probably never heard before. You're going to hear your consciousness. Or whose consciousness are you going to hear? Mine?
Well, we'll...
You can tap it onto me. You know, it'll probably be very jumbled.
You're looking pretty good, Bill. Where'd you get that tan?
I got that tan in my backyard. Is
wow.
Where I got that. It was a great day for doing that today. So, well, go ahead. You know, I wanted to stop you on that. The consciousness thing.
Well,
it's always curious to me.
I became so fascinated with EEG biofeedback in 1969 that I tried to get on board as a volunteer. There were only about four places in the country at that time that had the apparatus for volitional control of internal states. And that one of the encephalographic labs was at the Naval Electronics Lab in San Diego. Another one was Barbara Brown's group out at the VA Sepulveda. Then there was Langley Porter, but there was about a three-year waiting list. So I built my own EEG system, and I was the most popular kid on the block. We were training all of our friends to control their brain waves, and we gave away about a dozen of these things for Christmas in 1969, and somebody said, why don't you sell them? And that was the beginning of the Alphametrics Company. And since that time, we have built, many ethical biofeedback devices that have found their way into hospitals and schools and clinics and psychologists' offices. And that leads us to another fascinating story. I've always been interested in paranormal people with remarkable talents, healers, dowsers, magicians, radionics operators, people who could actually cause consciousness alteration in others, or who could apparently access information beyond their own, let's say, limited biosphere.
Well, you know, it's very easy for people just to kind of kiss that off as a lot of snake oil. But you and I both know that there are people that literally do it.
Right. So yeah. I was in a marvelous position to make actual brain wave chart recordings of people around the world at this time, from about early 1970 until 73. I found myself lecturing at SMU and Villanova and UCLA and USC on biofeedback. And when I was traveling, we could access people who had remarkable talents because I had one foot on each banana peel. At that time, I was an establishment scientist. Today, I'm a kook. But my interest
in
always...
think we can really call you a kook. But...
Well, I'm being humble.
Let's just call it avant-garde. Okay.
So what I did, when I was in Pennsylvania, for example, I'd find the Hexenmeister out in Lancaster County who would be working in his hat in the barn between midnight and dawn, making Hexen seagulls to bless the barns, and I'd wire up his brain and make recordings. I wired up charismatic faith healers. I wired up dowsers. I wired up a real genuine Polynesian kahuna, Morna Simeona, bloodline Polynesian kahuna, not a pretender. And the amazing thing is that all of these people, when they were in their working state, their altered consciousness, were showing a particular signature, and that happened to be about 7.8 hertz, right at the alpha
right
order.
Right there at the Earth frequency, almost.
So we devised ways to induce this state. First, we used photic stimulus, flashing lights at this precise frequency, and we found that it would work for a few people. We tried audio stimulus, evoke potential, click stimulus. I guess you've all heard Bob Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found that the magnetic fields, if they were produced in a particular way, and I brought one of the little boxes along tonight to show you what we were doing, was far more effective than any of these other things combined.
The magnetic fields did it.
The magnetic fields would reach all parts of the brain, both hemispheres, simultaneously. Mm-hmm. The problem with trying to induce an artificial state, or rather a normal state, with artificial means using light, was that the optic nerve transmitted the signal at different time delay times. The left eye would, the signal would reach the right occipital cortex at, say, X amount of delay. The left eye at X plus or minus some little error signal.
That's so part of the stereo vision that we have. It has to do it that way.
Yes, it is.
An alternating image technology.
And it's now known that a person with dyslexia reverses some characters, some figures, some letters because the optical nerves just are not carrying the signal at the same time. So we got away from using the optic nerve, using the ears, went directly to the magnetic fields, and that was Pandora's box. All of a sudden, the government became interested in what I was doing, and I had many trips to Washington and did briefings. We did the classic experiment with Andrea Puharich in his Faraday cage, where I guess everyone who's listened to the show knows what happened. We put subjects inside of the Faraday cage.
Let me stop you for just a second, because you always get our attention whenever you say Washington is attentive, because we always know that usually means trouble. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and with me tonight is Dr. Bob Beck. And we want to stretch your mind a bit, so stay in there. Deals with the Well, the unknown, the different things that are going on, well, you don't hear about it, you don't read about it, but it is. You just went to Washington, and they would know about it in Washington.
Oh, there.
What is their interest in Washington, by the way?
Believe it or not, they believe that the magnetic entrainment is the simplest way for mass crowd control, for rescuing hostages. Strangely enough,
it bothers me, Bob, when Washington is interested in mass crowd control.
It bothers me a great deal.
Magnetically or electronically. Because I may be a part of the crowd, and I am not at all interested in wanting to think the way some bureaucrat in Washington thinks I should think.
I agree.
Is that up?
That's
Are
up.
They working on that?
They've been working on this for at least 6 years.
Who's working on it?
I don't think it would be polite to mention too many names.
Go right ahead, if you want to. I mean, don't put yourself in trouble.
Well, let's pass the buck here. I guess many of the readers, listeners, saw the January Omni magazine with the lead article on the magnetic fields that control your moods, control your life.
They should. I've read that.
I spent 4.5 hours with Kathleen on the telephone when she was writing this article, and I requested that she did not use my name in it. But in the article, the work of Dr. Ross Ady out here in California at the Pettus Veterans Memorial Hospital at Loma Linda was noted, and Dr. Jose Delgado, who left the University of New Mexico, probably because his work got to be very controversial and is now in Madrid, Spain. And these people who are government-funded, who are thoroughly up on the technology, are totally convinced that this is the new direction for both medicine, consciousness, alteration of behavior, etc. And
well, everything is a two-edged sword. Now, you can
yes,
take this
is.
Science, which certainly can alter your behavior patterns and alter the way you think, particularly if you're in a mental hospital or you're criminally in... We can change those people. I mean, it's
right.
just pure science that can be done.
Right.
But like a hammer, you know, we wouldn't have civilization without a hammer. But a hammer can also be a lethal weapon. Now we're dealing with a science that gives a bureaucrat an opportunity to alter my brain waves, and there is nothing I can do about it. And I don't want it.
Bill, I think it's gone a little beyond that. We made an absolutely alarming discovery several months ago that certain commercial establishments are already using this technology.
The subliminals?
No. The subliminals have been around for a number of years. The listeners probably know that behind the music in the supermarket, some supermarkets, you are given the suggestion that you won't shoplift, you won't steal. This is rather old technology.
That's old technology.
But the frightening thing is that we think we discovered a restaurant that is using magnetic fields to give a person sort of an agitation, like an adrenaline response, when the person has the flight or rather the fright or flight reaction. He will eat faster. When he eats faster, they clear the tables faster, and they can run quite a few more people through that restaurant during one shift than they could normally. And I was amazed that some of this mood control technology had filtered down to the commercial sector this rapidly. We had thought that there would perhaps be, a 4 or 5 year lag time. But there's enough information in the open scientific literature that undoubtedly some sharp entrepreneurs have picked up on this. The positive correlates here would be to mood condition conference rooms, meeting rooms, engineering offices to increase productivity and reduce stress. But apparently, like almost every other discovery, the first reductions to practice for this technology are being used against us, not for our best interests.
On the negative side, or on the greed side.
Right.
Always have to have the greed side taken care of first.
Yes.
And I want to get back to Washington doing this. Why is Washington toying with the technology?
The story that I have heard
can turn me around any way I want to, or any way they want me to be.
We were terribly embarrassed during the Iranian crisis, where a number of our people were taken hostage. And at that time, I was quite close with a number of people in the field that were working in this area. Their rationale was that had we had another few minutes, our people in the embassy in Iran would have had time to destroy some documents, at least to fortify what they were doing, and we wouldn't have been nearly as embarrassed. And had the Marines there started shooting, we would have been in another desperate political situation. But had the, let's say, invading forces, the Muslims, been slowed down a little bit, we could have accomplished the purpose and no one would have known hell. Now, that is the reason that they gave me in Washington for wanting to exploit some of the technology that I had personally developed and I had sort of kept out of that sector.
All right, let's get back to that technology in the hands of government in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Science that if you put a device or a scientific principle in operation with enough energy, it can alter the way you think and the way you feel and your emotions and everything else. It's just pure, raw science. Now we find out that the government knows all about this. And I don't know where you're coming from, but I'll tell you where I'm coming from. I do not want a bureaucrat working on a machine that is going to tell me how I am going to think. I see this as an absolute, enormous problem of unspeakable proportions, Robert.
A few years ago, in our little family group that knew about this and was experimenting with it and doing it, unfortunately, illegally with human subjects, we posited the Kalin, which is worse, for them to know about it and believe it, or for them not to know about it and disbelieve it. And it's difficult to tell. When the government gets involved in these things, usually it's for their own purposes and not for the benefit of the citizenry. I guess about a year and a half ago, June, many of you, many of the listeners, saw the newspaper feature story of Dr. Ross Ady and the Lida, which was a little box that had been brought from the Soviet Union about 30 years ago.
Long time ago.
And he had demonstrated this for an agency meeting, I believe it was the CIA in Washington, and had told this auditorium full of highly placed persons with very high classifications, "I can put the majority of you in this room to sleep in a matter of minutes when I turn this on, with an invisible, tasteless, odorless emanation in the electromagnetic spectrum." And some anecdotal information about this LIDA or LIDA device, which has been published in the paper, was that when this device was floating around in the Pentagon, one of our GIs came through, saw the thing on the desk, and said, "My God, where did you get that?" And they told him that it had been acquired legally from the Soviet Union. He said, "That is the device that was used in the brainwashing in the Korean conflict." Now, that was 1950, 1951. Now, that was 35 years ago. Think how far the Soviets are probably advanced in this field today.
Mm-hmm.
We feel that the future of medicine consciousness does lie in the electromagnetic spectrum, not in the pharmaceutical, not in the chemical domain.
Well, I think that there's no doubt about it, Bob, within the next decade, that hospitals are going to be relegated to places where you fix bones.
Right.
And, you know, have wounds sewed up. And that's it. The rest of it will probably be done at home, and it will be done electromagnetically and mechanically.
I've had the extreme good fortune to meet a number of the people and attend conferences with them who are pioneering this area. Dr. Robert O. Becker, who was mentioned for a Nobel Prize several years ago for his work in electromagnetic medicine. But unfortunately, like some of us, he was a little bit too outspoken, and he was horizontally arabesqued from his position as orthopedic surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He has an excellent book out now that I can highly recommend to anyone interested in New Age health. It's called The Body Electric, and the author is Robert O. Becker, B-E-C-K-E-R, M-D. And he goes into this in great detail. I bought my copy at the Bodhi Tree Bookstore, and if there are any around, we highly recommend this as a...
Well, it's certainly an open mind recommended book, The Body Electric. And that was just the forerunner of what is actually happening right now.
Right.
You know, I'm involved in, I'm very privileged, let's put it to say, a lot of experimentation that's going on in this particular field.
Right.
And what we see is a phenomenon. It defies description what electromagnetics and health can do, and magnetics and health can do, and bending space-time and
right.
how that can affect your entire, your body makeup. I'm seeing it every day, and it's always kind of mind-blowing what's happening out there.
Last October, I was the guest of the Medtronic folk in Minneapolis, and I was invited to spend a day with Dr. Otto Schmidt, who's professor of engineering, of course, at the university. And Schmidt is the inventor of the Schmidt trigger, the grand old man of electronics, and his brother, Francis O. Schmidt, is dean of neurobiology at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, of course. And Otto was extremely excited that they had proved mathematically that Robert O. Becker is correct, that you can rejuvenate even nerve and brain tissue with electromagnetic input and mm-hmm. signals. And the main problem here was not one of science, not one of medicine, but one of politics.
Mm-hmm.
If you start restoring some of these older people, bringing them back to full mental ability, what's going to happen to Social Security? What will happen to the pension funds, the insurance policies, if they continue to live and become healthy and active?
Isn't that terrible?
And this was the main problem. Not that it couldn't be done, but what will change ergonomically in the sociological patterns, the political patterns? This was their main concern.
Isn't it sad that that becomes a great concern? I think that there has been a lot of stifling of research in this particular field by another industry, which is a multi-billion dollar industry, that is taking care of your health with chemicals and knives.
Exactly.
And they do not want you to be able to do it at home with an electronic device.
There is simply no profit in it.
And hopefully, there's nothing more powerful than an aroused American public. They're more powerful than the chemical companies and are more powerful than the AMA. They actually are more powerful than the government and the bankers if they're aroused about this. The technology is here. We can do it right now, but there are a lot of people that like the status quo, whether we're talking about the way medicine is run or we're talking about free energy, and you and I both know that free energy is here. The ramifications of that, of how that's going to affect somebody's economic bailiwick, get to be staggering. And people involved on the other side get to be violent, in fact. And how
all
sad
true.
It is.
All true.
They really don't give a damn about you and me. They just want our money.
Protect the profit.
That's it. Well, go ahead. We took a little side trip there.
Now, one of the most amazing things that I had encountered in many, many years was that if these people who were showing about a 7.8 hertz signature in their brain waves when they were in their working state, whether it was clairvoyance or healing or remote viewing or dowsing or operating a radionics magic black box. And by the way, we'll be showing slides of some of these next weekend at the Marriott.
Oh, do that.
Demonstrating some of this.
I know people have loved to come to your lectures, and I want you to tell it where it is.
Well, believe it or not, Paul Andrews has conned me one more time into giving a seminar, and you have no idea how I hate these things, because it takes hundreds of hours of preparation to get all of the instruments and materials together so that people aren't bored. But we're doing a number on Saturday, April the 6th, starting at 10 a.m. at the L.A. Airport Marriott Hotel. And for reservations, last time we had to turn some people away, you might want to call Paul at area code 213-393-9405. And what we'd planned on doing down there is presenting a very elaborate film strip showing the beginnings of the magic black box healing systems from the times of Albert Abrams through Ruth Drown and Galen Hieronymus and Peter mm-hmm. Kelly, showing some of the electromagnetic tools that are being used now in the advanced thinking in the holistic health field. Unfortunately, a number of these devices are highly illegal.
In the United States.
In the United States. They're not in Great Britain. They're not illegal in other countries.
They're used over in the more healthy countries because they have them.
So all we're going to do is show slides of them, and if people want to build their own, we'll be able to provide them with absolutely authentic, absolutely accurate, totally debugged, working schematic diagrams so that anyone can build his own.
Build your own health.
Don't tell me about it, because I'm not supposed to talk about these, or at least...
But you're not selling it to them, so...
We're not selling them a thing. We're just giving them the information, saving them the time that they would take in researching this. That number, again, is 393-9405, and if you lose it, is it listed as Synergy Health Systems in the Santa Monica area, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y? We should have a lot of fun. We're going to demonstrate the Aurora Tone of Cecil Stokes, one of the early color healing devices that was funded by the Crosby brothers, Bing Crosby and Larry Crosby Foundation.
Right.
Demonstrate the mandalascope, show slides of the Lakowski multiple wave oscillator that was the first device that generated scalar waves for curing cancer, arthritis, and what have you.
And that's the way it's going to be cured.
And these things are highly illegal, but we hope that a lot of people build them. When I first published on this a number of years ago, about 100 people went out.
Whenever you say illegal, by that you mean it hasn't been, the Swami has not been put upon it by the bureaucrats?
No, I mean that John Miner, the district attorney, and John Miner went around to the offices of licensed physicians, medical doctors, chiropractors, with axes, took these things out into the streets in 1962 and smashed them up, put some of the operators in jail, like Dr. Ruth Drown.
Where was John Miner, the district attorney?
John Miner was working with the FDA, and this was Los Angeles County, and it was 1962 that the push came, and a number of these people were actually jailed. Their civil liberties were taken away from them for using these devices. I had quite a collection of them at one time.
Did the devices ever hurt anybody?
Not that I know of.
Did they cure anybody?
Well, according to the history of these things, they cured a number of incurable people.
Well, now, what is the great crime that was committed?
They were not approved by the Food and Drug Administration. They were not approved by the majority of thinkers. The establishment thought that they were witchcraft. Radionics is an established, practiced art in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the doctors use it. A number of doctors that I know use these things, but they keep them locked away in their attics. And
They just simply want to cure the people to
right.
with the bureaucrats. Is that it?
I know dozens of doctors here in Los Angeles who use this as their primary diagnostic means. And in fact, they even diagnose for other doctors in the area with tricky cases. And my advice would be simply build your own. We'll show people how to do that, if they're interested in it, but we certainly can't demonstrate the actual boxes in that area because they are contraband. By the way, they're now legal in the state of Nevada. The Nevada Clinic of Preventive Medicine is using this type of apparatus, and fortunately they were powerful enough there, the Latter-day Saint type people, to shove this through the legislature a few years ago. So there's one state in the United States that does use this type of healing, and we're delighted to see that.
But, you know, to give you an idea of how the bureaucrats operate, it doesn't relate, but it does relate in a way. I'm thinking of the case of our friend Joe Newman, who has a device that is a free energy device. It works. He can't get a patent. The patent office has agreed that it works. They know that it produces more energy than it... They have gone through everything... And he is having to go to court.
I know.
Been in court. And the master came in and said, it works. But the bureaucrats have such a mindset that they say, we're not going to give you a patent because obviously
that's perpetual.
It doesn't work. Because I, the bureaucrat, have spoken. And God bless Joe Newman, and I hope he breaks down that bureaucratic wall.
Yeah. Tom Bearden sent me a videotape of that device, and we've shown it to a number of meetings around Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating thing. He's still hung up. They've still refused to
budge. I think they're in court now, or in the process of it, for the second time. But the last time through, the judge says, I'm no physicist, bring in a master. And a master is a legal term, somebody who is a physicist who knows.
Right.
And the master says, I can't tell you the principle, but I can tell you that it works. And that's the bottom line. You don't need formulas. It works. Tell that to the bureaucrats in the patent office. Of course, Commissioner Duncan has already been accused by a federal judge in Texas of being an incompetent, but he's the one who is stopping him. How he can stay there, I don't know, but it works. But the people will win out, and we certainly support Joe Newman and all his work. But this happens in many areas of science that are new and they're advanced, and they are not in the physics books. And we're seeing so much science now that's just not in the physics books. And if it's not in the physics books, of course, it didn't happen, because the physics books were evidently given to us on a mountain by God on stone tablets somewhere. But all of that is being shoved aside, and it's a very hard time for a lot of these people to realize these things. Maybe this will begin to open, because medicine's future does lie in magnetics and electromagnetics, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. We were hoisted by the Carnegie study about the turn of the century, which incidentally seems to have been funded by the pharmaceutical houses, and said there's nothing to this. And like Harvey...
Actually, they would say that.
Circulation of blood, they would rather be right with the authorities than wrong with the truth.
Well, you know, the chemical companies do an awful lot for us. They pollute our water, they pollute our atmosphere, and...
they've done a lot of good,
and
their time
is
gone.
But their time is over, but they're not giving up the fight. They're extremely wealthy, and they have control of all of the processes of Washington and this great bureaucratic government that we have put together. It's Open Mind tonight. I'm talking to Dr. Robert Beck about some things that may open your mind to the new world of science that is out there, a science that you perhaps don't read about too much in the newspaper, hear about on the radio, but you'll hear about it here, and I want you to hear more. We've got till midnight, so you stay with. Involved in the, I guess we would call it the vanguard, or the cutting edge of science. And he's one of a cadre of scientists around the world that get out there and give us the new things to think about, and certainly... when there are new things and there are things that are beyond our imagination, that has a two-edged sword. We have gone about 50 minutes without giving you a chance to talk to some of the audience, which I know wants to talk to you. We have a lot of things to talk about between now and midnight, but I do want to bring them in, and I think Craig is on the line. Craig, welcome aboard.
Good evening, Bill.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to ask Dr. Beck some more about the health and healing aspects of his work.
He's right here.
Good evening, Dr. Beck.
Well, months, Craig.
Will you be possibly be able to set up any office hours for some of us that need a little feedback, that are trying to build your circuits and schematics and all this at a future date?
Oh, I could probably do this if it's all for everyone at the same time. I'd be delighted to do this.
Yeah.
In fact, our number, I'm shuffling this off on Paul Andrews, is area code 213-393-9405.
Mm-hmm.
And if enough people have a little technical expertise, of course. We don't want to start at ground zero. We'd be just delighted to sort of hold your hand and see if there are any points that we missed in the schematics.
That would be terrific. If you pop in and out of the office once in a while, and we could call you at that location. Or
some of the things we plan, seminar next Saturday on the 6th, are schematics for the multiple wave oscillator.
Mm-hmm.
And schematics for negative ion generators, and a device which actually measures the ions.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people get sick around the Xerox machines. Some of my friends can't stand to be in the same room with them, and the reason for that is that they have a high voltage positive, direct current, an anode supply that is sucking up all the negative ions and putting out a lot of positive ones, and the positive ones make the people sick.
Sounds like a fluorescent light to me.
And I've got one of the little boxes right here. Too bad it isn't television, but it's about twice the size of a cigarette pack that actually measures the ions in any environment and tells you go, no go, they're plus, they're minus, how many. And we'll pass out a schematic for this if we get them printed up in time. Otherwise, we'll mail them to you. That's one of the things you can build. And we're also giving out the circuits for the extreme low-frequency detectors and the extreme low-frequency generators, so you can sort of mood condition your own biosphere. And, yeah, we'd be just delighted to work with anyone who has a sincere interest in this.
That's great. I noticed also on these Xerox machines, they're blowing out all that solvent into the room that evaporates from the toner, and you're breathing all those toxic fumes like it's paint thinner type of stuff.
Right, and that's not helping you a bit.
Right.
You guys want to hang on just a minute, because I've got to blow out some of my own drawer here for just a moment, okay? I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Bill Jenkins, and we're talking to Dr. Bob Beck, and we're talking about your mind and the things that science is doing to it and can do to it and will do to it. So you'll need an open mind to find out how yours is being twisted just a little bit. So stay with. We're 6 minutes past the 10 o'clock mark on this Saturday night, Bob. And we were talking to Craig. Craig, do you want to go ahead and wrap it up there?
Yeah.
Stall there, buddy?
Yep. And on the negative ion generators here a little more, Kent, first of all, can't you get radiation burns from the high-speed beta particle electrons that are shooting off there, just like fallout or radiation?
No.
And also, can't the... I've used one of your bug detectors, and it produces all kinds of electrical interference in the circuitry, and I think that negates any beneficial effects from the ions. And I unplugged the darn thing. It interferes with the radio and everything.
Well, Craig, like everything else in life, they're good ones and they're...
Okay. But you can't get radiation burns then?
No, you cannot get any hard radiation, alpha, beta, gamma, no such thing coming out. The maximum voltage at which those run before producing ozone is around 14,000 volts.
Mm-hmm.
And in open air, there's no vacuum there, so you're not likely to get any kind of radiation except the brush discharge, the corona that's producing the ions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have problems with those here. We thought it would be a good idea to have them in here.
Oh, they put out too much static, too much...
Well, there's also that the ozone level, with all of the electrical connections that are around here. You want to see a chief engineer go crazy.
Right.
Turn one of those on here to get rid of all of our cigarette smoke.
If the device has been made in the last 15 years, it won't produce any ozone. That's the first thing you have to look for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Some more on the health and heating. Can your brain tuners be used for seasickness or space sickness, possibly by the astronauts?
We kind of have an agreement. We're not going to talk about those tonight because the FDA is a little bit on the warpath. But I'll answer that for you privately. If you'd like to call Paul at 393-9405 and give me your home number.
Okay.
We're kind of limiting this to stuff that is legal, like biofeedback, which are passive devices. And we're going to play some brainwave simulation here in a few minutes.
By legal, we mean that it's been approved by the FDA.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's illegal if they haven't approved it. It's just
no,
they don't understand it yet.
But they're pretty touchy about some of these new age things. They will cut into the profits, of course, of the medical trusts. So... at least the biofeedback doesn't. It's grandfathered.
You apparently were able to measure some real psychic healer types, and you said there were 7.8 hertz resonating with the natural Earth's electrical field, and I wonder why, if we're all exposed to it, why we aren't all psychic and why we could become benefited by having a brain tuner type thing or a similar device if we're not already sensitive to the natural background frequency.
That's a good question. If we're going to talk about electronic shamanism Saturday, April 6th. Psychotronics. I'm the national president of the U.S. Psychotronics Association. Psychotronics is sort of electronic shamanism. It requires an interaction of the consciousness of the operator with the electronic device. And this is the problem. A lot of operators cannot get into that state. But with biofeedback training, when they listen to a tape of a particular frequency or modulated frequency and tune their brain to it, they become much more accurate and they can access these data, more readily. It's almost as though the mind is a hologram. And unless you tune it to a precise frequency, you don't get a coherent readout. That would be a metaphor. And yes, that's a very good question. What we did find was that in many cases, when we measured the Earth ionosphere cavity resonance, the Schumann resonance, and put that on a totally isolated track of a twin-track recorder and measured the subject's brainwave, there was a phase lock during a particular time. It doesn't require long, just a few seconds, and the person has accessed the information, and then it might take half an hour to do something with the data. And it suggested that man as a biocosmic resonator was actually tuning to this magnetic pace setter, this circadian rhythm. So naturally, we wound some big coils and put a lot of subjects in a magnetic field that was considerably stronger than the natural ambient. And we were able to produce altered states. And, of course, you heard Puharich talk about the experiments we did in 1977 and 78.
Right, yeah.
And I was the guy that set that thing up, and Puharich, of course, thought it was a good idea, and we tried to alert the community that something was going on here. And this is when I came out of the closet and became very public and got involved with some of the spook types and some of the good guys and some of the bad guys. But at least we're talking about it.
So in other words, even if you're naturally exposed, say, before the age of radio, all the natives in the jungle throughout the world, they weren't all psychic and there was no modern electrical interference to interfere with their brain tuning. It's just that individuals are different, I guess, right?
I understand the Aborigines are far more psychic than we, and they use telepathy as one of their communication channels, and they're very close to nature. And primitive people apparently are far more sensitive to these minute signals, which incidentally are in the window range of about 125 microgals, 125 millionths of, while the Earth's ambient is about 4/10 of a gals present, the thing that makes your voice gout compass point north. So these signals are just very minute, but there's a window effect. If they're too strong, they won't work. If they're too weak, they won't work. We started out by winding huge Helmholtz coils, about 9 feet in diameter, and putting one on the ceiling, one on the floor, and one on the north wall, and south, and east and west. Then we found that we did far better with a point source. It was as though the brain, as Tom Bearden puts so eloquently, is a scalar detector. And the left and the right hemisphere, being in slightly different spatial relationships, can detect a near field more easily than a far field. So if you're working with this, Craig, you're better off using a point source than a uniform field.
Hopefully then with some artificial gadgetry, then a lot more of us could develop those potentials then with a nearby little unit.
Yes, I think you can. If you followed the work done at Menninger Foundation, the Greens, they believe that the theta state is the access portal, the window to altered states of consciousness. They've written some excellent books on this subject, and we highly recommend their work.
Okay, fine. Any more throughout the show, I'll be listening off there, if you get more details on the regrowing of limbs or the diagnosing or beaming beneficial rays into the people to cure plaque or tumors, I'd be interested here.
Our absolute saint in this area, of course, is Dr. Robert O. Becker, who pioneered this, and as I mentioned earlier, his book is available now, and I bought mine at the Bodhi Tree Bookstore, and it's called The Body Electric.
Mm-hmm.
And you, of all people, should run, not walk, and pick up a copy of this. They had only a few of them last week.
Great, great. Well, I know children can regrow the fingertips if they don't sew it up. They just bandage it, and the fingertips will grow out by themselves, but presumably he did better than that electrically.
Oh, yes, he has, and he can't talk about it, of course, because he did use some human subjects, and that's illegal. You're supposed to do many years of rat studies, and then you get approval from the FDA, and then only then can you use human subjects. This is where I broke the law a lot back 10, 15 years ago, because I used human volunteer subjects for some of the brainwave control that we were doing. And later in the show, we have a little brainwave amplifier here and the signal generator, and we'll play over the air the modulated tone of the psychic state, the alpha state, the theta state, the delta state. And you'll notice that the alpha-theta border, the 7.83 hertz, is the thing that's been used since the beginning of time as the tremolo, the vibrato in music. It's a very soothing sound, and it does cause alteration of consciousness.
Well, it's a shame that they can slap the wrists of the guys that implant an artificial heart that's not approved in a guy, and they can split open a little baby like a watermelon and implant a baboon heart where they know it's not going to work. They're just experimenting, and that's okay, but you can't have a little battery-operated radio device to...
Right. We're going for full FDA approval on the brain tuner, which is why we're keeping a very low profile on it. The company that makes them is doing all of the red tape work, Bechtech International, and we expect to have these things approved by the FDA in a few months, and so we're not doing anything to rock the boat in the meantime. The problem with that is once it is approved by the FDA, it's accessible only through a medical doctor on prescription, and undoubtedly the price will go up astronomically.
Well, you guys open a clinic in Tijuana, there's a lot of good groups appearing down there.
Good thinking, Craig.
It's not just Laetro now. There's all kinds of vaccines and stuff they got down there. Good stuff.
I know. Cellular therapy and Gervite, hello.
There's been the vaccines against cancer going back 100 years. That's documented in that cancer conspiracy little book by Pinnacle Books. And they've arrested them.
There's some horror stories about cancer that one of these days we'll tell you. They go back to 1929.
I know. I followed that for many years, Craig, and I am in total agreement. I believe people should be given back to themselves, not delivered into the hands of another vested interest. But how are we going to do that?
Well, we will try our best to see that that comes to the surface.
Thank you for your time, Bill.
Thank you, Craig, for checking in. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me tonight is Dr. Robert Beck, and we're talking about some things that are on the borderlines of science that it will be your future. And it would be well that you stay with us, and I hope you do. Jenkins, we're talking about the mind, among other things, and what can happen to it electromagnetically and magnetically with Dr. Robert Beck is here. And Chris is on the line. Chris, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Well, I want to tell you that I appreciate the guts that you have a show like this. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's not only me that has the guts, but it's George Green and Wally Sherwin and the American Broadcasting Companies.
Well, to all of you.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you a straight-out question about something that ever since I became aware of the things that you deal in and talk about, Mr. Bearden, Mr. Dini, Mr. Beck, and others, something that's been bothering me, and it recurred again tonight when you talked about that soldier who spied that box and said, hey, when I was in the detention camp, etc. You know, I read the Soviet weaponization pamphlet Mr. Bearden put out, and I was listening about what that soldier said, and I'm trying to understand how anybody with any reasonable objectivity can believe that this free nation and other free nations are going to be around for much longer without getting crushed or burnt up or frozen or whatever. Can you comment on that?
I understand what you're saying and where you're coming from, but you don't need to really worry that much. Although we talk about how foolish they are in Washington, and they are in many, many areas. They're not all dumb-dumbs up there.
Sure.
And there is a lot going on. Enough going on to counter what's happening on the other side.
You really believe that?
Recently, that we can say that, I think.
I believe that this is true. This certainly wasn't the case when I surfaced in about 1973 to 77. I did a number of briefings back there, not only in the Pentagon, but for the intelligence communities. I actually demonstrated some of the apparatus. We set it up right there on their own turf, let them test it. At one of the briefings, the Senate Select Committee on Science and Technology showed up, totally uninvited, at a top-secret facility and walked in, and the fellow who had sponsored me back there was absolutely petrified, and he beckoned me out into the hall, and he said, well, what are we going to do? And I said, I don't know, it's your party. I said, I think we ought to tell them the truth, just continue the way we were. Apparently, the powers that be look at the elected officials as temporary, and behind the scenes, the powers that be continue to run their little tight ships one way or another. So I went ahead with the briefing, and here sat this contingency of about six stony-faced persons from wherever they came from, and they walked out, and I never heard a word from them since. But our sponsors, which were some of the agency people, were absolutely petrified that the Congress and Senate had taken an interest in this field. They thought that they had it pretty well sewed up on a rather secure basis. And you're right. When this gets into the wrong hands, it's just another thing to worry about. 150 years ago, it was smallpox, diphtheria, and Indians, and typhoid fever. And I believe that mankind simply evolves behind this. The problem up in Eugene, Oregon, eventually straightened itself out because a number of people were put on Dilantin, which is epileptic-type seizure control pharmaceutical, and the rest of them simply adapted.
Adapted or moved.
Or moved, right.
Some of them couldn't adapt, and there are a lot of people who can still go in that area, and it's troublesome for them.
Right.
I just read Mr. McCrae's book, Mind Wars, I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes, we're trying to get him on the show, but he's hiding away in London right now.
Yeah, he mentions, you know, the bunkers like Randy and, you know, people you're familiar with.
Right.
And he does give you pretty good press on this. What is his angle on this?
I really don't know. The problem today is sorting out your friends, allies, and opponents to determine who are the disinformation agents and who have which ones have a sincere interest in the field. And sometimes that's hard to do. I confronted the chief scientist for the U.S. Navy out at the Ross 80 conference 2 years ago, And I said, Sam, I understand you're a Soviet mole. And he knew who I was, and I knew who he was. And he said, well, come on, let's go out into the patio and let's talk about this. And he said, you know, Bob, I've heard this from many different sectors, but let me tell you why I had to fire the people who were doing the remote viewing experiments up at Stanford Research Institute. And after I talked to him for about 20 minutes, by golly, I had to agree with him. Maybe he was right. So it is terribly, terribly difficult to know who's on first, particularly if you're just a civilian as I am. And by their fruit shall ye know them. Let's see what this person is doing with this bit of information and where it pops up again. It's really spooksville out there, and any new technology is the same way, but this is particularly lethal knowledge. And sometimes you just don't know how much of this is true, how much of it is simply a fabrication. But I would suggest you do your own experiments.
Yes, we are all still free agents. You know, you're mentioning Randy and the skeptics in that group. We're planning a show in July in which we are contacting the skeptics. That's Randy, that's...
Well, why don't you call them what they are? They're inquisitors.
Well, there is a very healthy need for a very healthy skeptic. Particularly whenever you're out on the outer edge like that.
They stimulate...
Good skepticism is absolutely vital.
Are they going beyond that, though?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, there's a check and balance here, and that's the reason I want to get them and Edwin Krupp and some of the people that are part of the skeptics, because for the most part, I don't know Randy, but I know Edwin, for instance. He's truly sincere about what he does and, you know, in dealing with the extraterrestrials in space and all of that sort of thing. But we'll try to get them on with their counterparts, and that'll be in July sometime. So we, Richard Chavez, who's my program coordinator, is working on that one, and I think it'll be a stimulating show. And I think they're necessary, and I think they're vital, because otherwise, those of us that find ourselves here on the outer edge can really get our heads in the clouds and start chasing moonbeams.
Chris, let me give you an example of where does the information go, down the rabbit hole or what have you. In 1965, there was an experimenter at Brain Research, UCLA, named Joseph Hamer, H-A-M-E-R. And he pasted a couple of pieces of Reynolds aluminum foil, one on the ceiling, one under the rug, and had run the output of an audio signal generator to these, and was only running from about 0.2 volts RMS down to 0.02 volts between these two pieces of tin foil. Invited students in from the hall and had given them a slight reward to run through some reaction time tests. And, by the way, this study has been published in clinical encephalography journals and many, many hardcore scientific references. He found that when the signal generator put out a frequency of around 3 to 5 hertz, the reaction time was nearly double. That meant that the person was working only at about half speed. When he tuned the signal generator to 9 hertz, the reaction time was speeded up. Now, this paper was published as Entrainment of the Human Brain by the Northrop Corporation. I happened to get a copy of it before it was classified, fortunately, so I can disseminate it legally. But if you call Northrop, that paper just simply doesn't exist. It has been totally swallowed up by the system. I can show it to you. I have copies of it. The experiment has been replicated by any number of other scientists. Now, 0.02, 0.01/100 of 1 volt RMS between a couple of pieces of tinfoil in your office can mean the difference between performance or just plain depression, lassitude, laziness, and you name it.
You now, can actually tune your... You can tune anybody's, or you can tune your own mental state.
What happens if you have a little device in your briefcase, you're at the board meeting, and you want the opposition to look silly? You hit button one, and when your guy comes up, you hit button number two. This has been known since 1965. We can give you the medical references to these studies. Now, just think how far this technology has probably been developed by the industrial sector, not to mention the military, intelligence, community, etc.
Imagine what that would do in a courtroom.
Right.
Can I leave you with one thought?
Sure.
this is something I just read recently, and I think it applies to all the things I've been hearing on the show. This is a quote. Probably more scientists have been adversely affected, stopped altogether from a given line of research, guided, shaped, propelled, decelerated, forced into non-publication secrecy, turned down for funds or promotion, and barred from access to laboratory space or archives because of defiance of conventional wisdom in America since World War II, with its accompanying bureaucratization and politicization of science, than existed in the whole of the world in Galileo's day. What Galileo endured is nothing compared to what bold, intrepid young minds face in today's scientific circles, where a given paradigm or program brands all simple difference of viewpoint as idiosyncratic, nonsensical, futile, and troublemaking, the modern synonyms for medieval heresy. And I read that and I thought, oh, there it is.
Who wrote that? Because he was on target.
That was Mr. Robert Nisbet in his book, Prejudices.
Run, do not walk to the Bodhi tree and get Robert O. Becker's book. He has an entire chapter on the tribunal when his peer group was reviewing the heresy that he was performing. Of course, he's been vindicated, but that's the way it goes.
We're beginning to see it break down a little bit.
I think so. I think maybe you would have been shut down in the 30s or 40s just as eerily as Mr. Tesla was.
Oh, this show could not have happened 10 years ago. But we see successes. What comes to mind is our friend John C. Bedini's little book, his little device. It works.
Okay.
It produces an awful lot of energy from nothing, it seems like.
And that was a year to a year and a half to production, did he say?
Yeah, that'll be coming along fine. But it has been a very, very difficult job.
Who's going to write the book about the wiretapping and the mail opening and the threatening?
I suppose I'll write that book because I'm gathering that evidence and it affects me also.
I can't wait.
And we'll talk about it openly much more than we have in the past. But
I know you're not talking, but I know you'll talk someday.
Oh, you better believe it.
Chris, come on down to our seminar next week, April 6th at the airport, L.A. Airport Marriott Hotel. And you better get reservations. Call Paul at 393-9405 because we're expecting quite a turnout.
Well, wild horses and bureaucrats couldn't keep me away.
Terrific. And introduce yourself, by the way.
I'll do that.
So let's see what, got to know you. That's area code 213-393-9405. And we'll be talking about a lot of this stuff and demonstrating some of it, that we can talk about legally, and just showing slides of the things that we can't have on us. So it should be an interesting Saturday.
I'll be there.
All right, Chris, thank you very much for your call
and
participation and your interest. It always makes us feel good to know that it's happening out there with a lot of you. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
I bought some sitar records, you know, the Indian classical instrument.
Sure.
And I listen to them sometimes, and I experience a very tranquil, good feeling of well-being.
Oh, they've known these things for thousands of years over there.
Yes, I was wondering, is there some reason for that as far as alpha waves or...
Well, that's a pretty good lead-in, because right here on the table in front of me, I have a little signal generator, and I have an encephalographic EEG brainwave amplifier. And if you'd like, we can simulate some of these sounds, and let's see what happens to you.
Okay.
Now, let's hope everything works here. This is live, not on tape.
Yeah, we're live and in living color here, as Bob turns on us. Here we are.
Now, the mean median mode frequency of human alpha is around 10 hertz, and what we've done is modulated a voltage-controlled oscillator with an exactly 10 hertz signal that sounds like this. Now, the range of human alpha goes from about 8 hertz up to beyond about 12. If we fall down at this magic number, which is 7.83, which is about halfway between the theta, the upper theta, and the lower alpha.
That's Earth resonance, right?
This is the Schumann, the principal note of the Earth resonance. If we fall down into the delta, you can see why police sirens, ambulances, and what have you have this particular signal, because it alerts you on an unconscious level. If you're having an epileptic seizure, you'll show delta spiking somewhere down here around 3 to 4 hertz, which sounds like this. Now, the theta band, which the Menningers and Camilla and many other people have found the Elmer and Elise Green, is the band of creativity and accessing cosmic consciousness, sounds like this. In other words, if you amplified the brainwaves, your little natural encephalographic signals with electrodes on the outside of your scalp, and you heard this, you'd know that you were in theta. If you heard this, you'd know that you were in alpha. And then beta, which is the normal state of consciousness in which we find ourselves with our eyes open when our attention is focused, is anywhere from 14 to 20, 26 hertz. And as we calm ourselves and go down into the alpha, your brainwave will sound like this if you're listening to an amplified modulated signal.
We're going to mellow out the town here, Bob.
And the theta. And as we probably know, the sitar music, etc., uses a lot of these natural resonances. That's sort of a quick demonstration of what you can do with your brainwaves with a couple of hours of biofeedback training.
There was a very interesting body of work done about 25 years ago by Dr. Armand LaFrance. I believe it was at UCLA. He was a musician as well as a physicist. And he wrote music utilizing these principles, which would cause you to react exactly the way he wanted you to react by listening to the music.
Fantastic.
He could, I remember listening to him as a very young man in Palm Springs, and if you wanted to be excited, fine. If you wanted to really mellow out, and it was just music. But each one of those notes was crafted in the music to do a specific thing.
The classic example of this is a record called Rainbow in Curved Air by Terry Riley, and we're using a couple of tracks from Rainbow in Curved Air at the demonstration next Saturday. We're playing these soundtracks behind the mandalascope, and we'll let you experience precisely what some of these musical tones can do. I wish I had done that one myself, but it's a perfect example of what Bill's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Does that help you, Larry?
Yes, it does. And I was just wondering, what causes the... Is there a physiological reaction within your brain that that these different waves somehow cause... some kind of stimulation physiologically?
Actually, yes. The way, if your doctor suspects that you are an epileptic and sends you to a hospital that has a clinical encephalographic department, there are two ways of testing you. One is to flash a strobe light at your eyes at a particularly particular frequency called the epileptic flicker rate. And this photic stimulus can normally drive your brain into delta spiking, and that tells you positively that, yes, you have it. The other way is chemical. You probably remember back in the 60s, a number of psychedelic nightclubs had lawsuits against them because people who never suspected they were epileptics would go in, the flashing lights would trigger a petit mal, a grand mal seizure. And I know the Electric Circus in New York City had a number of problems before they sort of locked the strobe lights onto more benign frequencies. Now, that brainwave entrainment can be stimulated by light, epileptic flicker, photic stimulation. It can be stimulated by sound, click stimulus at certain frequencies, and it can definitely be triggered by magnetic fields. And this is the thing that we're worried about.
The digital square wave also, a broadcast digital square wave will... your skin picks that up, actually. It's a good receiver of it, and it can start doing things.
The problem in our complex society is that the brain is a nonlinear mechanism, mixes all of the heterodynes. If you have a squirrel cage blower in the air conditioner on the roof, and it's rotating at a certain frequency, and it's not degaussed, there's some residual magnetism in the blades, and you have a motor running in the Xerox machine, and the washing machine, and the elevator. The sum and difference of these frequencies, the harmonics of them, can sometimes fall in these windows. And we found this in a number of office buildings where people who are sensitive to this type of radiation, which happens to the population is about 35% of the gross human population, these people will get nauseas, have headaches, have very short attention spans, undergo depression, sort of pregnancy, whether they're men, women, or children, morning sickness. And we have developed magnetic detectors, which I'm sure you're aware of. You can build these quite inexpensively, that detect the H vector, the magnetic fields, that are causing some of the sickness, and we call it the new occultism, the hidden factors in health and disease. You can't smell them, you can't taste them, you can't see them, but with the proper electronic instrumentation, you can certainly detect them.
It's our own electronic and magnetic smog that's around.
Right.
And particularly in a city like Los Angeles, it is intense.
It
that's
really
one of the reasons that you feel so good when you get up in the mountains. You know,
exactly.
It's not the vista, and it's not the clear air. You have cleared yourself of all of these other influences which are really affecting your body.
And you just don't realize it till you get away from it.
Yes, I've noticed that in Arizona and southern Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but when I've gone on some trips there, it seems like there's something that just brings this feeling of clarity that I don't normally experience.
You're away from the smog. And
yeah,
we're talking about the electronic smog, not the the smog we see and smell.
But it's actually, I see. Yeah, because in this L.A., for some reason, it just...
Any city.
Back about 12 years ago, we did some interesting experiments. We took one of our first rather primitive magnetometers that consisted of a huge coil of very fine copper wire and some extremely low-noise amplifiers around to various spots where people felt good and felt bad. And sure enough, we found that the standing waves of the Schumann resonances were predominant at places like American Indian Magical Burial Grounds up in the Joshua National Monument area and Brew Joy.
Brew, yeah.
Right. Had me come up and we checked the Sky High Ranch area and we found that the vibes up there were just absolutely marvelous. So he used that.
Right, it's 7.83, right?
Right. And you can move a few hundred feet and be totally out of this. And the geophysicists know that it depends on the iron ore concentration in the soil and the standing waves and all of these variables, but you can detect this. You can actually measure it when you have the right equipment.
Can you build a transmitter that would transmit that around you?
Yes, and we've done that, and this little blue box right here, which we don't talk about too much, puts out the exact magnetic field that you need. This is the one we demonstrate in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we have skeptics... at a conference a while back, we demonstrated that from the back of the room, we could control the brainwaves of the
just
volunteers.
Just mellow them out right there on the spot.
Right. We'd have volunteers wire up on a Tektronix encephalograph and an oscilloscope, and we had a number of skeptics in the audience at many of these demonstrations. And I would turn this little box and double blind, say, okay, now we're going to put out a X encephalographic signal and now a Y. And this has been thoroughly tested, thoroughly replicated. It's not snake oil anymore. It's scientifically validated.
It's a little tough for some of the bureaucrats to figure it out, you know, but they will come along, we hope.
Well,
does that help you, Larry?
Yes, it does.
Right.
Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. I enjoy the show.
Thank you. Thank you for contributing to it. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Dr. Bob Vec. It's Open Mind. Rick, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you. Excellent program tonight. You had a number of fine calls. I'm a kind of an amateur dowser, and I'm fascinated in the whole area of extreme low frequency. And I've got a couple of maybe elementary questions to ask, and I'm wondering if the 7.83 hertz is the standing frequency for the planet or whether it's a frequency which is kind of universal.
Okay, that's a good question. In about the late 1950s, Dr. W. O. Schumann, S-C-H-U-M-A-N-N, postulated that since the Earth was a capacitor, we have an ionosphere, we have a layer of air that's a good dielectric, and then we have the ground itself. And since this is being pumped by lightning strokes and what have you, it should ring like a bell. And he postulated that the principal node was around 10 hertz. Well, when it was actually measured in the early 1960s by the National Bureau of Standards, the principal nodes were 7.8 hertz, 14.1, 22, 23, etc. And the highest amplitude signal is at that 7.8 hertz. Now, this changes a little bit with climate, with sunspot activity, with lunar tides, which also affect the ocean tides, as you know.
Which explains why people act strange in a full moon, huh?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the first one to postulate this maybe 14 years ago, and it sounded like nonsense then, but enough work's been done to replicate this since. And Come around to the Dowsers group sometime. Vince Weiberg and the Dowsers of Los Angeles County, Dulac, meets first Saturday of every month at Plummer Park and meet some more Dowsers. And
okay.
Maybe a lot of things besides dowsing.
I might like to do that. Since humans have developed on the planet, and obviously the two hemispheres of the brain are generating a standing wave themselves like quartz crystals, do also, are they all tied, all related simply to the Earth as the parent...
We don't know. We believe that there are certain people who, by dint of meditation, religious practices, or what have you, have developed the ability to tune into this, and they act like dual conversion superhats. The rest of us are crystal sets.
I see.
But if you practice meditation, and particularly biofeedback, you can actually tune to some of these key frequencies. Now, people interested in psychotronics have actually done this and found that, sure enough, their performance goes up. People interested in remote viewing, astral travel, and what have you have actually done this. It takes about 4.5 hours, and it's darn hard work. And you can buy biofeedback units from Edmunds Scientific or from almost anyone in the field. And just do it. Try it. Tell me how you like it.
Okay. What are ley lines? How would they tie into this standing wave?
Okay, there's a tremendous amount of interest in grid, ley lines, etc., and, of course, Stonehenge. If you followed Bruce Cathy's work, which isn't particularly mathematically sound, dowsers are just now beginning to find a commercial outlet for their talents in finding if you're sleeping over geopathogenic zones, which they believe are connected with Europe. This is more accepted than it is here. Come on around to the Dowsers, and at least once every month, somebody has some brand new input on this. I think you'll enjoy the group.
Yes, I'd like to do that then.
Okay, Rick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I've got to lay a line down here myself. It goes this way. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Getting into some areas of science that perhaps you don't know is going on out there, but it is going on, and science is beginning to tinker with your mind, and that's one of the things that we want to talk about. There's got to be something we can do, or at least fend ourselves away from it, from the government tinkering with your mind to the corporations tinkering with your mind to whomever tinkering with your mind. How far has the science gone, Bob?
Okay. We were a little bit horrified a couple of years ago when a friend of mine in Washington, Eldon Byrd, B-Y-R-D, that works for the Naval Office of Surface Weaponry, decided to do a literature search in the open literature on the subject of magnetic entrainment, magnetic control. He found close to 3,000 references in the hardcore scientific literature, and he was kind enough to send me a copy of this bibliography. So if any scientist type out there doubts this, we're trying to make all of this material available to the public on a need-to-know basis, or even if you don't need to know. If you're interested, then the Xerox cost us about 4 cents a page, and this bibliography cost him about $4,000 to have typed in the typing pool back at White Oaks, Maryland. But if anyone has a sincere interest in this, let us know. Call Paul at area code 213-393-9405, and we can make this available to you. And I think you'll be absolutely horrified at the amount of research that has gone into behavior modification. You're probably aware that Dr. Jose Delgado, with implanted electrodes, was stopping bulls, bullring-type fighting bulls, in mid-charge when he was in New Mexico. He can now do this with magnetic fields without implanted electrodes. So pick up a copy of the January Omni magazine and read the article on magnetic fields that control your mind, and I think you'll be a little bit amazed how far this has come in the last few years.
Well, it is kind of scary. We're going to pop out of here for right now and take a little break for the news and see what happens, because another hour is coming up. Dr. Robert Beck, and we have not only talking about opening your mind, but getting into it and doing with it whatever we want to do. Or not we, necessarily, but people can, and people do, and people are. And you should know what's bombarding you left and right, and who's doing the bombarding. Is it a growing problem?
Well, the more people who know about it, the bigger the problem becomes.
Mm-hmm.
We understand there are kids in New York City with briefcases having mind-bending parties now, and who knows, like the computer hackers, where will it all lead?
It will certainly upset the way society works, doesn't it? If you can control somebody's mind electronically, there is nothing that they can do about it. It's going to happen.
There again, the choice between thermonuclear war and saving the turf and getting the people out is another moral consideration. When the woodpecker burst upon the scene in Eugene, Oregon, we were totally unprepared for the consequences. In fact, I think we brought down a little bit of a tape tonight of what
we have. We have some woodpecker ready to go.
Why don't you fire it up and let's see what it sounds like?
Well, why don't you explain to us what it is first? For those that have just joined us tonight, we're talking about these electromagnetic and magnetic impulses that are around us all the time.
Okay. In the spring of 1978, Marshall Van Oort, who was the health physicist at the University of Oregon, Corvallis, Oregon, began getting strange reports of physiological symptoms appearing to be mild epilepsy, mild seizures. When he did a field investigation, he found clusters of human beings, even as you and I, who were being influenced by some mysterious radio signal. A lot of people got on board this. It turned out that at the time, they felt that it was coming from the Soviet Union and that the infamous woodpecker signal was a form of over-the-horizon radar. Now, colleagues of mine got involved in this new witch hunt. Bill Bice, who ran the Northwest Institute of Non-Ionizing Radiation.
Bill's been on the show and...
Good man.
Very good man, yes.
Got involved, and I was funded to come up there by the Health Physics Department, and I had one of the only magnetic detectors in civilian captivity. I'd been doing research with this, and when I saw the headlines that this mysterious radio signal was causing problems up there, I let him know. I used to be radiological defense chief of this area back in the 60s, and I knew a little bit about the way bureaucracies worked and how investigations should be run. So I volunteered that if they would send me a plane ticket, I'd come up there and see what my instruments would find. We identified this signal, which happened to be 10 hertz, which is usually a benign frequency. Had they dropped it about 3 hertz, they would have had an incredible mess on their hands. We detected the signal. It was coming in 200 to 500 microgauss, which was about 2 to 4 times the Earth's ambient. It was definitely man-made. It was an artificial signal. We found it at a number of sites up in the Eugene-Corvallis area. And a few days later, the Environmental Protective Agency sent their truck with Dr. Rick Tell, who's the Western Regional Director. And he said, well, there was nothing to worry about. He couldn't find the signal. Then later he said it was a transmitter at Dixon, being run by the Navy, and then later he backed off on this.
Does he still have his job, by the way?
Oh, yes, and he's doing fine. I showed him how to build the detectors, and he's built some of these, so now he finds what he's looking for. But at any rate, this was the first time that the phenomena of electromagnetic entrainment of the human brain had been recognized as a rather global threat. Undoubtedly, this had happened on a limited scale ever since the time of Korea, when the Soviets experimenting with electromagnetic brainwashing. So it reared its ugly head about, it would be 7 years ago. And
why did they pick on the Eugene, Oregon, Corvallis, Oregon?
I don't think they actually picked on it. It was sort of an accident of nature. In the first place, the entire area had a very high water table. If you dropped a hole, you'd hit water, which meant that you had a highly conductive ground plane. The second thing, the power lines were connected to the Bonneville Dam in this 890-mile-long Pacific intertie that connects out here at that huge screen wire cage in Sylmar.
Right.
If you're driving up the freeway, you'll see the southern terminus of this DC antenna. And this 890-mile-long antenna appeared to be picking up this signal and transmitting it through the power grid as secondary radiation. We traced hotspots all over that area. And so Eugene just happened to be in the way. It was also on the western slope of the mountains up there that acted as sort of a natural reflector. I don't think the Soviets deliberately targeted the area. I think it was just one of those unhappy circumstances, like the people down on Fairfax who happened to be over a gas dome.
And were they just sending the signal toward the United States, or was it something else and we just happened to get the tail end of another thing that was going on?
Well, now you've opened another Pandora's box. Some of the more recent information would indicate that the signals are coming from satellites, and some of those might be our own.
You want to say that again?
No. In fact, I'm going to avoid that topic religiously. We have had some additional input in the last month or two that would indicate that things were not exactly what they seemed in 1978.
So we have satellites that are bombarding us with what we would call the woodpecker signal. What does the woodpecker do to the human mind?
If you are sensitive to these influences, if you're in that 30% of the people who have this indigenous sensitivity, it can cause brainwave entrainment. It can interrupt the natural circadian rhythms of your own biosphere. I wish this were television. What I have here is a little electrostatic voltmeter, and I think you can see this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just picked up a Scripto pencil from the table here, and I'm going to move it around in front of the electrostatic voltmeter. Now, I'm going to do something magical to this pencil. We've demonstrated this at a number of the seminars. I'm going to put an electrostatic charge on it. Now, when I move it from the same distance, you can see that the meter is going crazy. Now, if we believe the work that was done at UCLA by Dr. Hamer, and I most certainly do, we now have a charged source of electrostatic electrons, let's say.
You did that by running it through your hair.
I did this by combing my hair. This pencil would now pick up little scraps of paper, electrostatic. Mm-hmm. Now, if I wave this at you, Bill, at 3 beats per second, you can probably feel this. You'll probably slow down. If your eyes were closed and I were in back of you, you would still feel it. Now, if I move this faster at about 9 hertz, which I'm doing right now, what I'm doing is holding the end of this pencil on the eraser end, and I'm sort of flipping it back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You come back up tone, if you're one of those sensitive people. And this was the experiment that Dr. Hamer, Joseph Hamer, I don't know whether he's a doctor or not, did at UCLA, later repeated at Northrop, which caused entrainment of the human brain with these almost invisible influences. Now, both the magnetic, the H-vector, and the electrostatic, the E-vector, can have these effects on people who are sensitive to this. And that means that with these new artificial sources of tremendous amounts of electromagnetic energy, we are, again, at the crossroads. We have another threat that might be worse than the diphtheria, smallpox and Indians of a couple of hundred years ago that we mentioned earlier on the show. And fortunately, the carrier frequency, the pulse repetition rate of this woodpecker, if you want to fire it up, we have it on the tape,
right,
is 10 hertz. And that's fairly benign, but it still can cause distress with some people who are sensitive.
And what if it was down to 7 hertz?
If we're down around 6 2/3 hertz, you would have mild epileptic-type seizures, the same as the flashing strobe lights in the psychedelic nightclubs, if they were at the epileptic flicker rate. They're critical window frequencies with most mammals. Why don't you play a little of that tape so people can see what they get on the
show? This is an actual recording of the woodpecker signal that we thought was from the Soviet Union, but it may not be from there.
Right.
It may be from our own satellites. How very thrilling to know that.
Signal. You can see the little LED tuning flash here of the device known as the Soviet woodpecker. And we're looking at this at the 12th of January, 1983, in real time, at 16 hours, 39 minutes, and 14 seconds, coordinated universal time, at about 19 megahertz on a little Panasonic high-sensitivity 5-band receiver, little pocket radio. And the significant thing here is that if we collapse the antenna, where it won't get local station, the thing still files in. With an antenna like this, we can get very few local radio stations, but this is about 3,000 miles away. We can take this antenna almost entirely off and put a little bitty folded paper clip in here, and this is still the strongest signal on the air that has ever been made by man. That's 40 megawatts peak power, from going 24 hours a day from a number of transmitters around the world, long period of time.
Okay.
All this. Okay, that's a tape that we did when I was being interviewed in Washington, D.C. about 2 years ago, and we brought it in here tonight in case we were too close to your own transmitting towers. The last time we tried this, we were in so much electromagnetic interference we couldn't get it on our shortwave radio, so we backed ourselves up here by bringing a tape in tonight.
Yeah, we're sitting on top of our own transmitter here as far as that goes. Now, these woodpecker signals that have been coming in now, they're at a benign frequency, you say, at 10 hertz. Purpose of it?
The original estimate of the situation was that it was over-the-horizon radar originating at Riga, Gomel, in the Soviet Union, watching for missile launches, which cause ionization and therefore reflect a radar signal. At one time, and I still believe this, I believe that the technology is such that they can be used to communicate with underwater nuclear submarines at operational depths. We were still playing with Project Sanguine Seafarer. There's a great deal of additional information in these signals that is just at this time being decoded by scientists who have the proper equipment, spectrum analyzers, etc.
A lot of sub-carrying going on the woodpeckers.
A lot of sub-carrier information, including some pictures.
Pictures?
Pictures.
Of what?
Well, let's talk about that when we're off the air. But it's a little bit scary. My neck's out far enough tonight, Bill. Some of this is speculative. We're not stating all of this is fact. We're just saying that this is some of the best thinking on the subject.
Mm-hmm. So the woodpecker signal is with us. Is that over the horizon or radar station that has kicked up such a furor in the last few months in Washington, is that really over the horizon radar station that the Soviets are putting up over there?
I doubt it very, very much.
But it certainly is easy to call it that if you don't know anything else to call it, right?
Right.
Which is what happens in Washington. Well, we're 20 minutes past 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. It's Open Mind. With me is Dr. Robert Beck. I'm Bill Jenkins. Where is it going? What's the reason for it? You say those signals are everywhere.
Everywhere. They've been protested by all of the international radio allocation boards, the ham operators, the broadcasters. They pop up at random times in the middle of the broadcast bands on shortwave. They're everywhere from about 5 megahertz to 150 or so megahertz.
How do they affect me and you, sitting here in Los Angeles right now?
Oh, well, speculation again, but I think by now, since they came on the air in July of 1976, I think by now most of us have sort of adapted. But if there's any change in these, our government became so concerned that they put an artificial 10 hertz field on terrapins, turtles. They found that the ones that were irradiated grew at about twice the rate. There were hungry all the time. When I had a pet turtle when I was a little kid, he'd wake up every now and then and eat a few ants and go back to sleep. But these that were irradiated were hyperactive. Now, when they cut this 10 hertz field off in this scientific study, the turtles became cannibalistic and started eating each other, attacking each other. Now, this study was done recently. I learned about it in Washington in the last couple of months. This is frightening. What happens when they cut the signal off after your body has adapted to this artificial electromagnetic pulse that's been with us now for nearly 9 years? We are altered.
So when he take it away from us, we don't know what our behavior patterns will be then.
We don't know. There's no place you can hide. The pulse repetition rate of 10 hertz should not be confused with the carrier frequency. The carrier frequency is the taxi cab. That's in the shortwave high-frequency band. And inside of this taxi cab is this pulse repetition rate. And the pulse repetition rate falls directly on the mean median mode of human brainwave encephalographic signature. So it has to be interacting with the nonlinearity in our own biosphere.
Well, are these signals also present in the Soviet Union? Do you have any research on that?
I'm sure they are. But on the other hand, the Soviet Union is on a 50 hertz power grid. We're on a 60 hertz, 60 cycle, and the heterodynes will fall in a different band. Don't forget, our brain tissue is a nonlinear transducer, and it tends to mix all of these ambient signals with all the local signals.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely complex.
Well, so now we don't know whether we want them to turn off the woodpeckers or not.
Good question.
Now that we've got them, we're living with them, but if somebody pulls the switch on it, what happens next?
We just don't know. We know what it does to turtles.
You're filling us full of fun stuff tonight, Bob.
Well, it's here. It's
yeah. Some of the things we just really have to deal with. We have Edison on the line. Hello, Edison. Welcome.
Hi, it's Edson.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, how are you both?
I'm fine. Hi.
Okay, I've done a lot of research with the late Dr. Albert Roy Davis and his biomagnetic research. And I found in my own research that I've come up with what are called dicot seedlings with an extra seed leaf after I've treated them in magnetic field. But I also wanted to ask about the research at Caltech University of Joseph Kirschvink and the magnetite in tumors of mice and the control that was given at a geophysical union conference in San Francisco in December of 1981. And another thing about the research at Shelford University in England by Dr. Cyril Smith and the people living under the high tension wires there in a certain little English village. They got a high whenever there was a peak power load because their endorphins raised. And when that power load went down, you were just talking about what happens after they turn the current off. Several of these villagers committed suicide, so it's really a danger. Also, have you heard of the hyperbaric and magnetic field combination used in the Soviet Union to treat muscular dystrophy? That is high pressure
oxygen. We've been doing this here for a number of years, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, would you leave your telephone number with the operator? I'd like to contact you personally and get into this. You sound remarkably well informed on these, and there are not too many of you out there.
Thank you very much. Have you heard of the X effect that Joseph Gudovich reported happened in Holyoke, Massachusetts, where some early day fusion research was being done in these...
I know Joseph, and I get together with him every few years. He was quite interested in radionics, psychotronics, wrote that amazing article in Saga magazine a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not familiar with this facet.
Well, basically what happens to... similar Gauss strength magnets, different magnetic poles. The researchers were trying to control a fusion reaction, and they unfortunately worked in where the two poles intersected. That's the X effect.
Sort of a Philadelphia experiment all over again.
Yeah, that's something else.
Didn't it?
Yeah. What do you think about crystals and also the phases of the moon, the interaction between crystals and that?
I just don't know whether that's reality, which means something going on in somebody's belief structure, or actuality, that's something happening independent of your belief.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I knew more about that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of phenomenology about that, but raw data, I haven't seen too much.
Mm-hmm. As you may have known, I write about Nikola Tesla a lot. My letters to the editor are published in the Times every once in a while.
Right.
Yeah.
One of us.
I came across some interesting information about... Have you heard of the Amtorg Corporation, the Soviet front corporation? I don't know if it's still in existence or not, but it seems that they were quite interested in Tesla's Defa ray plans, particle beam plans, and even purchased somebody's patent back in the 1930s.
I have the only original copy of the Tesla death ray plans, and it was a forerunner of the particle beam weaponry. It was an extremely high voltage particle accelerator, and I made all this public at the U.S. Psychotronics Conference in Atlanta last year. And so that's out of the closet now. And I'd be happy to share it with you.
It did get a dog.
Hmm.
No, when he demonstrated it, I think.
Yeah.
It was back in New Jersey. Zapped a dog.
Wow. He was stripping the nucleus of mercury, accelerating it in extremely high voltage fields, and he had the first particle beam weapon system. For the time, it was highly... it was a very clever device, but it's been surpassed with today's technology.
Mm.
For the time, it was an amazing device.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge Van de Graaff generator. Instead of using a belt, he used compressed air, desiccated air, running through the charge collectors, driven by multi-horsepower blowers. He collected this charge on a sphere about 45 feet in diameter. I have his own drawings and the disclosure that came from his own typewriter, and it's absolutely fascinating. At the time of his death, FDR had left standing orders that his papers were to be shipped to Yugoslavia, although Tesla was a naturalized American citizen, and so, of course, Stalin got the papers. But that's another long story.
Stalin got the papers of Tesla and the a lot of the information from T. Henry Morey.
Yeah.
Two of our most brilliant physicists, and we just didn't pay any attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, by all means, leave your telephone number with the operator. I do want to contact you early next week, and we can talk about some of this.
Okay.
By the way, we are giving this little seminar. If you tuned in late, we're talking about some of these things, showing slides, giving some demonstrations on April the 6th, down at the L.A. Airport Marriott at 10 a.m., and come on down. Call Paul at area code 213-393-9405, and we should certainly have an interesting day.
Mm, sounds great.
Ensign, it sounds like you'll be quite an addition to the group down there.
I hope I can make it.
All right, thank you for calling, and call back.
Right.
All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and with me tonight, Dr. Robert Beck. We have sort of tripped the light fantastic here about electromagnetism and magnetism and what it is doing to each and every one of us. But I think one of the important things is to point out to people is that we are being affected mentally, physically, emotionally, by electronics. And some of it may be benign. It can be fatal on occasion.
Right.
And it's manipulated by others. And it's a whole new ball game we have to deal with. Health is involved, mental health is involved, life is involved.
The metaphor here that I like is that it is literally an occult influence. If you look in the dictionary, occult simply means hidden. And more recently it's become magical and metaphysical. But back at the turn, a couple of hundred years ago, most educated Europeans would not agree that a little thing the size of a microbe or a germ or a bacteria could kill half the population of Middle Europe with cholera, bubonic plague.
But it did.
And it did. And until we had the tools, the compound microscope, and until Pasteur, stealing from Koch, demonstrated this, not many people would believe it. Now, we have other occult influences besides germs. We seem to have stamped out most smallpox and most of the other diseases, but we're now confronted with an entirely new family of occult influences on the electromagnetic spectrum that can be just as devastating if they're misused.
And nature isn't doing them. Man is doing them.
No longer. We're bombarded with electromagnetic interference. And it is going to have to be taken into account in, the future of our health.
Yeah, it affects us deeply and personally. And it's something that you need to be aware of. And that's the reason we have Dr. Beck on tonight. George, you're on. Hello, George.
George.
George, we're waiting for you. Are you with us? We'll try you again. George, you there? Okay, George is not there. We'll go to Carol. Hi, Carol.
Yes, Carol. This is Carol.
You're on.
Yeah, all right. I have a very personal question to ask. A lot of this is beyond me and the scientific explanations, but it's absolutely intriguing and unbelievable.
Well, believe it.
I'm going to, because it's coming from you, Mr. Jenkins.
Well, how nice of you. Thank you.
So I believe it. However, what I wanted to say was, about 4 years ago, my daughter suffered a convulsion. She had never been sick a day in her life, and it was diagnosed as being epilepsy after a scan. Now, she's never had another seizure. She's in perfect health. She's a very bright and active girl. How can something like that just come about when there's no family history, no trauma, no nothing?
Where was she when this happened?
She was in Los Angeles, but we had just come back about 6 months before from a very unsuccessful trip to Prescott, Arizona.
Had she been to a disco or any of those kind of places?
Nothing. She's not that kind of girl, and she's never taken medication. She's never taken any drugs. Except since this incident, the neurologist who's seen her is giving her 30 milligrams of phenobarbital per day. I don't know if...
Still?
Still, since that time, right.
Well, I think I'd got a second opinion.
Well, I don't... I'll tell you the honest truth. It's Kaiser Hospital that's involved, and it's covered by coverage, and I don't have all that much money, but if I knew there was an honest person to go to, I would go, and I would take her, but I have no one to go to.
Well, we're not going to say that Kaiser's not being honest.
No,
I understand that.
But I'm sure saying that I'm 6 foot one and weigh about 200 pounds, and it would knock me out, so...
and yet that doesn't even bother her. She's so active and so intelligent. She drives. She does everything.
Okay, let's just hope that whatever it was does not recur.
Who can I go to see? I'm just wondering where these electromagnetic devices, how that has any connection with epilepsy. It's been around for so long before we had any of these things.
Well, the point is that the epileptic seizures can be triggered by chemicals, by histamines, by flashing lights, and by electromagnetic energy. So they're...
But you see, I was in the same room with her and nothing happened to me.
The thing that's mysterious here is that there had been no history of epilepsy in her family.
Now, no one's side.
Well, I would doubt then that it was a classical petit mal or grand mal.
When I spoke to the doctor and he said, you know, the picture showed a tendency toward it, I said, I've read that sometimes these things are positive and yet the person doesn't have epilepsy. And he agreed with me. Sometimes it can
be... I totally agree with that.
Yes. So I...
exposed position, and I'm sure the FDA doesn't really like me, and I would... suggest that you get a second opinion, or at least get a couple of books out of the Biomed Library at UCLA on epilepsy, and then you'll probably know more about it than most doctors.
But what is that called?
Well, they're books on epilepsy.
Yeah, well, I've read so many of them, but they're so outdated.
This is true. A number of people in Eugene, Oregon, were put on Dilantin, which is the...
Well, that's a very powerful drug.
I know, and these people were in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and then had absolutely no history of epilepsy before the woodpeckers. So it's possible to trigger these little neuronal seizures. Did she show delta spiking in the EEG?
What does that mean?
It's a sort of a hill and spike signature and an electroencephalogram.
I don't know that.
I wonder if you could get the encephalographic records, the chart recordings that were made from the doctor, and let another neurologist somewhere, a licensed medical doctor, I'm a physicist, not an MD, look at those. And I would certainly feel better about that if she were my daughter.
But you wouldn't be able to recommend a neurologist to me off the air.
I wouldn't dare.
No, Carol, that's not our function here. They're everywhere. Just call the Medical Association and ask for another one, and they will give you a name.
And what's this thing? Hello?
Yes.
And what's this thing about going to UCLA? What can I look for there?
I would just do a computer search on recent articles on the subject of epilepsy and seizures. They have a marvelous library out there.
They do.
Yeah, just ask them for that and they'll find it for you.
I'm going to do that because this seems very strange just to have one seizure like that.
Well, I would certainly not condemn her to a lifetime of phenobarbital.
Well, that's what I don't want. That's exactly what I don't want to do.
Don't forget, this is simply my own personal opinion.
Exactly. I share that view myself.
Okay, Carol, I hope that helps you.
Thank you very much. It certainly does.
All right.
Thank you, dear. Bye-bye.
Have you both.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Robert Beck. And, Dr. Beck, you have told us a lot of things tonight that are certainly food for thought and perhaps a few strange dreams.
Well,
let's get into it a little bit.
give the standard disclaimer. I reserve the right to change my mind about any of this when we get better data. But meanwhile,
this is the data as it stands right now.
Right.
Steve, what's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening to you both. It's a fascinating show.
Thank you.
And I've been doing some reading, and I have a question about free energy devices.
Okay.
And but before I get into this, the lady called Carol asked about epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
She may want to contact Dr. Baker.
I tell you what, we don't want to get into that right now.
Fine.
That's what I think.
Okay. Just a reference, anyway.
They've got the quilt.
I have the book, The Awesome Life Force, and there's a chapter on free energy devices. Huh?
Joe Cater, he's an old friend of mine.
Oh. What's a caduceus coil? I have no idea what that is.
All right, a caduceus coil.
Caduceus coil.
See, caduceus, it would look like the two serpents entwined about the staff that is the symbol of the medical profession. And this device was thrust upon the scientific community in the mid-1950s by Wilbert Smith, who was with the Canadian Department of Transport, which is their equivalent of our Federal Communications Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did is he took some ferrite loopstick cores. In those days, I think they were about a half inch in diameter and maybe 6 inches long. He started winding at one end two separate windings that crossed at a particular angle as these turns proceeded up the coil form. And he felt that they were producing an anomalous electromagnetic wave. A bunch of amateur radio operators in Canada began experimenting with these, and apparently they put out something that might even be called a scalar wave today.
Mm-hmm.
So basically a caduceus coil is like the two serpents, one going clockwise, the other counterclockwise around a vertical staff.
Is there a blueprint or is anyone making it?
No, you can wind your own. They're quick and dirty. I wound dozens of them. I wasn't able to find any effects one way or another, but maybe I wasn't doing it exactly right.
I think it's very interesting about Wilbert Smith, you know, where he says he got the information to do the
flying saucers.
From the Venetians, right?
Well,
from Venus.
But caught my attention. It doesn't heat up even with high amperage. That would be a great advantage.
That was one of the claims, and until a number of people replicate these independently, the jury is still out on a number of these devices.
I see. Would you have a blueprint if I go to that meeting?
No, we sort of went through this about 30 years ago, and it comes up from time to time, like Mobius coils, Caduceus coils, time delay built into the coil with ferrite beads. These are absolutely fascinating experimental frontier areas, but different persons give different reports of what they get. So until it stabilizes, I really don't have too much of an opinion on that.
Make your own and play with it.
Yeah, build it.
Well, I like to. That's why I'd like to know how. How about devices to help learning faster, such as subliminal tapes or any other things? Do you work in that area?
Yes, I've seen a lot of these. The super learning and the, I guess Hemisync. And
Hemisync certainly does that.
Right.
Cool.
Dr. Flanagan's Neurophone is very effective in this area.
And brain tuners, of course, stimulate some of the neurotransmitters that enhance memory. And when you have a better memory, you learn faster. Yes, there's a great deal of technology that's addressed this very problem. And we talk about it from time to time, but it wasn't a topic that we intend to bring up on April the 6th at the meeting.
Okay,
does that help you, Steve?
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
I'll be there.
All right, good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
She's a bright...
Dr. Robert Beck is with us. Get to as many of these calls as we can. Doug, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. It's nice to talk to you on the phone. It's hard to get into you sometimes. Dr. Beck, it's nice to talk to you again, too. I've talked to you several times at the local dowsing meetings in Orange County.
Oh, hi there.
Hi. And Dolak, I'm the one that's nuts about Bandini's little black box.
All right, yeah.
For my motorhome I'm trying to convert.
Sure.
But my question is, I'm a little confused with these hertz, these low electrical waves and stuff that you've been talking about all night.
Extremely low.
Yeah. You said that they were predominant in, like, the religious areas or higher elevations and stuff like that where people were feeling euphoric or felt better.
Let's put it this way. The amplitude of the signal seemed to be higher in certain places than others. Anywhere in the Earth ionosphere cavity, you're going to get roughly the same spectra if you're on a node. But this can vary from a few hundred feet from, say, 25 microgauss to over 200. You can have maybe an order of magnitude differential in the amplitude just by moving your coil around in the area.
Yeah.
And apparently some of the sacred places had very high amplitude, so something in our ancestors or the Indians could sense this, and that's where they set up shop.
Well, I don't know if I'm off base on this, but how does negative ions fall into that?
It doesn't. It's we're talking about cats, canaries, and bananas.
Okay, because from what it sounded like, the negative ions for like negative ion generators and the positive ions and the wind.
Whole different side.
Whole different ballgame there.
They're good for you, but not for the same reason.
Okay, because I thought there was some similarity the way you were talking.
Well, if you like negative ions, get yourself a Boston Fern.
No, just negative ion generators were one of the things we were going to talk about so people could build their own and build their measurement next Saturday the 6th.
Uh-huh. And that's going to be in L.A.?
Yeah, it'll be at the Airport Marriott Hotel, and we're starting at 10 a.m. in the morning. And give Paul a call at 393-9405, and looks like we're going to have a full house, so he'll make room for you.
What was the number again, 393?
393-9405.
Okay, Doug,
okay, great. Thanks a lot, Bill.
All right, glad to have you on.
Take care.
We have time for maybe one more call. We'll try to get to, what is that, Henrik?
Yes.
Hi, Henrik.
Good evening, and Bill and Dr. Begg, it's been a pleasure listening to you, as it always is, Bill.
Thank you.
Your programs are so outstanding. I'd like to ask Dr. Begg a question about a book by Joe Gudovich. His name was mentioned previously here in your broadcast. It's titled Magic Signs of the Future. Are
right.
you aware of that?
Yes, I am, and that is one of the better works that's been done on radionics and psychotronics. It's an excellent
right.
little
now,
book.
Now, he speaks in this book about L fields. Which I'm very interested in because
all right, that was,
they affect people.
Harold Saxton Burr, and we'll bring down an L-field meter to the meeting next Saturday.
Oh, that's terrific. That's why I say this. I have written a book called Vibrations, and I mentioned the Gudovich book in here. In fact, at the time I wrote the book, it came out in November, I said it would be nice if the scientific world could construct an instrument that could measure these L fields. Apparently,
right.
this has been done.
Dr. Burr, who was professor emeritus of physiology at Yale, of course,
right.
about 40 years ago was using vacuum tubes to measure these body fields. Well, today you can buy for 39 cents a bifet transistor that does a far better job, and you can build your own meter for, about $15 or $20. We will have a circuit diagram for doing this at the April the 6th seminar at the L.A. Airport Marriott.
Okay.
Does that? I'm sorry we got to go here, Henrik, but our time has run out.
Well, come on down and introduce yourself. We'll get into them.
When you got to go, you got to go.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you very much, Bob Beck, for being with us tonight. During the month of April, we'll have our open forum after Dodger baseball every night. But on May 4th, Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden will join us. We'll talk about the effects of the space people on us. We'll see you then.
Happy celebration, 25!